Blog Talk Radio.
Boxing fans, this is Rope-A-Dope Radio. I'm your host, Chris Carlson. Lots to talk about from a busy fight weekend that maybe on the surface didn't have the big, big fights, big names. I mean, it had some big names, Lucien Boutte, Marco Huck, very recognizable names, but, you know, didn't have maybe the HBO Showtime, you know, I guess American fights over here that people get really pumped up for, but, you know, sometimes on those weekends, we talk about it a lot. Sometimes, just like last weekend, actually, we had a lot of great fights the weekend before, I should say, not this last Saturday, but we had a lot of great fights. Lucien Boutte versus Denis Krachev. We'll talk about that. Also, Marco Huck against Farhad Aslam. And that was a really, really good fight, back and forth fight. I felt like Huck against Povetkin, I thought, Povetkin lost that fight. I gave that to Huck. But in this one, Arslan, I got to give it to him. It's a really good fight. We'll talk about it. Many people thought Boutte got away with one as well. We'll get into that. There is a crazy, crazy scorecard from that that fight that we'll get into as well. Thought both of them were pretty solid fights, though. And obviously, you know, we're going to preview, debate, and predict the Abner Mares and Selmo Moreno fight on Showtime this weekend in Staples Center. Also, here's a guy that's really coming along and having a great year. He's, you know, gaining popularity, gaining momentum, Leo Santa Cruz. And also the return of Angulo, Alfredo Angulo, on the undercard for Showtime. Also, we'll get into, of course, preview and debate and predict HBO, the HBO fight, Arislandi Lara versus Vanes Martirosyan. It's funny because it was supposed to be for a title eliminator, and it is for a title eliminator for Canelo Alvarez. Last week, though, Jose Suleiman, who's the president of the WBC, said that Canelo will get an option before, you know, he has to fight. Basically, he'll fight in May and then fight the winner of this fight this weekend. But now he's going back on it, saying they have to face it. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens there. I really don't know exactly. It's kind of weird. Just like literally a week later, he changes his mind. He says, you're not going to fight Mayweather. You're going to fight one of these guys. So I don't really know what's going on. Also on the undercard, Mikey Garcia versus Jonathan Barros should be it's a good fill-in fight. Salido was on that card. But Barros is a good solid opponent. Also, Vladimir Klitschko is in action. RIP to Carmen Basilio, died at age 85. We'll talk about his career. 50 Cent and Floyd Mayweather Twitter beef continues. And, of course, we'll just look at the rest of the fight schedule. There is a show box planned as well, but there's a lot to talk about. No doubt about it. The first guest is a middleweight prospect, Chris Pearson. He's a guy that has, he's a southpaw. He's a guy that has a great amateur pedigree. That's for sure. He's beaten four former Olympians. He took part in the World Series of Boxing for the L.A. Matadors. He's got a good man in his quarter to manage his career, Al Haymon. We'll talk, you know, everything about it. We'll talk about his past. We'll talk about his future and his fight coming up this week. And he's fighting on the undercard of that Showtime fight, Mares and Moreno, which at 122. That's some of the top fighters there, besides Nonito Donaire, of course. But we'll definitely get into all that. Right about now, though, we're going to go ahead and give our first guest to call. And I apologize, we're a half hour late because of some blog talk issues. It didn't even look like I was going to be able to schedule the show at first, but I tried to schedule it last night, tried to schedule it during the day. The only time it let me schedule it for some reason, even though it says the time's available, is 8:30. I don't know why. It wouldn't let me do it earlier today or later or anything. So a little delay on the show. Sorry about that, but we're going to go ahead and give middleweight prospect Chris Pearson a call and see how he's doing right before his fight coming up here very soon.
Hello.
Yeah, is this Chris Pearson?
Yeah, this is him.
Hey, what's going on, man? You're live on Rope-A-Dope Radio. I'd like to, you know, thanks for taking out time tonight. I know you got a fight coming up. You got a busy schedule. How you feeling tonight, man?
We're feeling good. We just leaving the gym. Had a nice little shakeout. Just focusing on making the way now. You know, we shot. We had a good training camp, so.
And what is going to be the weight for this? We've seen you close to the junior middleweight. We've seen you at 160 middleweight. Is that something that what's the fight for this weekend going to be at?
Yeah, I mean the weight for this fight, if I'm not mistaken, is 56. But I'm campaigning at junior middleweight 154.
Okay. All right. So that's where you're going to campaign, and you're going to go from there then.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about first, you know, we'll talk about this week and we'll talk about your pro debut. But for those who don't know, and by now most people know, Chris Pearson has a great, great amateur pedigree, 93-8. He defeated former Olympians, a gold medalist. Just talk about, Chris, how you got in the sport, what age, and really what influenced you to keep boxing and saying, you know what, I really want to start competing at this. And just getting into it and you know, really putting yourself in the line of this sport.
Initially, I started boxing just to, you know, help benefit the other sports I play, get in better condition. And just as the years went on, I just fell in love with the sport. And we know that the one-on-one competition and having to dedicate yourself to anything, you're going to eventually, you know, have strong feelings for it. So, being the real competitor that I am, you know, I didn't want to just have do nothing. So, and I seen the type of work that's required to be successful in boxing. So, I started taking it real serious probably about 16. And, you know, I went up to the Olympic Education Center. And when I got with Coach Al Mitchell, and he helped take it to another level. So, just from then on, we just, you know, we've been building and trying to get better each time out.
And, you know, I mean, tons of amateur experience. And just talk about what that did, seeing all those different styles, maybe, you know, gaining confidence, obviously fighting mm-hmm. such talented guys for, you know, former Olympians. Kind of just talk about all the different places you got to travel and just to see all those different styles and how it, you know, prepares you for the future and definitely for your, you know, future career.
Majority of our top professional was good amateurs, so and was able to, you know, travel and see the world. Amateur boxing is great for that. You know, you get the opportunity to go to different countries and see life outside of your own country. So, you know, and doing that, I was able to fight a lot of talented guys and get a lot of good experience. So now as a professional going into a fight, I'm not necessarily nervous or worried about what I'm going to see because I know I've seen a lot. I'm still prepared for whatever, but, you know, That's the benefit of having an extensive amateur background. You see so many different styles. It doesn't do anything to prepare you to be successful as a professional.
Definitely, man, and that's very important. We see it all the time. A guy looks, you know, unbeatable versus a guy that's going to stand right in front of him. Once the guy's on the move a little bit or switches it up, some guys are lost in there. And not just that, but you know the different styles, but also you mentioned – kind of like to see different parts of the country and the world. As far as just growing as a person and growing as a man, how did that help you as well, just to see some things that maybe, you know, people around you know, don't get a chance. A lot of people don't get a chance to travel like that when they're young.
Yeah, definitely. For me, it just helped me, you know, it gave me a sense of motivation to want to achieve great things because, you know, I see that it's more than what you just accustomed to growing up sitting in your neighborhood where you able to travel the country and see a bunch of different places and travel to different countries and see how they live there, and it helps you be grateful for what you have, because a lot of countries, we live a lot better than majority of other countries. So, you know, you see why those guys fight so hard when they come over here, because they really fight for their lives. You know, sometimes Americans, we can be spoiled because we used to having it all. So going to other countries, give you opportunity to see, like, how good you got it and how bad it could be if you don't do what you're supposed to do. So that's what I took from traveling, is just, you know, seeing how blessed I am and just try to, you know, take advantage of the opportunities I'm given to the best of my ability.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we've heard it time and time again with people traveling outside the country, and they even say, maybe someone from a rougher, you know, rougher area still say, wow. I mean, there's, you know, they even think, wow, I guess I didn't have it as bad as I thought. And it's right. Amazing. You, like you said, you could see that fighting spirit, knowing that, you know, that they, this is their way out of wherever they came from. So that's really interesting that you took that out of it instead of just being young and kind of dumb and just kind of living in the moment. You actually took something out of it, man. That's really good. And one more thing about the amateurs, like I said, you had a lot of pedigree, saw a lot of different styles, beat a former 2008 gold medalist. The L.A. Matadors, the World Series of Boxing, talk a little bit about that for people that don't remember or don't, you know, haven't seen it for whatever reason. It's basically amateurs fighting amateurs with the pro style without the headgear. Talk about, you know, maybe how that did that. You know, we heard great things about it, but we also heard some things where maybe you're getting, you know, a pro style and pro, you know, ideas and that type of thing in the translation for that when it comes to your pro career. But also, did it take away from your amateur style that you need to win fights? Just talk kind of all, you know, all purpose about that L.A. Matadors opportunity there, Chris.
Like I tell everybody who asks me about the World Series of Boxing, there's definitely pros and cons. I do believe that fighting against those top competitors in the pro style definitely helped me to be successful now as a professional. It did kind of tamper with my style as an amateur, because the amateurs are so different from the pros. It's more about moving and scoring points and coming at angles, which in the pros, it is to a certain extent, but in the pros, they more so want to see happy shots and who's delivering more punishment. So it did kind of, like I said, it did tamper with my style a little bit, but I feel like I adapted well to the amateurs and the pro style. So, but yeah, it's, and another thing about the WSB is the fact that you fight so many tough guys. Because I've seen a lot of guys get broke in the WSB that necessarily probably won't be real good professionals because they left it all there. So that's the only danger of it. The only danger of doing the WSB, you get great experience. You fight against the best, you know. So if you, that's what you want to do, fight against the best and really test yourself, then the WSB is good. But like I said, there's pros and cons to everything. I definitely was more so interested in being a world champion than just continuously fighting what was considered amateur. You know, you're fighting these guys that in the pros, you know, you'd be fighting for hundreds of thousands of dollars, and you fighting them for, you know, little or nothing just to prove a point, which is cool to understand. But, you know, guys got families. It just don't make sense to get burnt out in something that's considered the amateurs when you can make millions of dollars in the professional ranks and still fight people that's considered the best.
That's a great point. Like you said, the pros and cons. And, yeah, when I first heard about it, then when I actually saw it in place and saw the fighters, I thought, wow, it's a great experience. And I think it's a good tool as far as turning our amateurs into pros and using that pro style. But like you said, you make some good points in there too, though. So interesting. It'll be interesting to see the future of the World Series of Boxing. But, hey, at least you got to experience some of that. Let's talk about your pro debut. And we're here live on Rope-A-Dope Radio with 154-pound prospect Chris Pearson. He's a southpaw. He's a guy that has an amateur pedigree. Go look him up if you haven't checked him out already. Most people know about this guy. Let's talk about your pro debut, Chris. Just how did it feel to get in there? Obviously, you've taken the headgear off in the World Series of Boxing, but to have the smaller gloves, because I believe they were a little bit bigger in the World Series of Boxing than normal. But either way, how did it feel just to get out there, man, and get that one under your belt?
I definitely didn't feel like it was my pro debut. I just felt like it was an opportunity to to be seen by more people. You know, the WFC did give me that good sense of security and that good experience of fighting without a headgear. And like I said, against way tougher competition. So going into the fight, you know, I knew that I was prepared. I knew that I was in great shape. So I was looking to be impressive. And I'm thankful that everything worked out the way it did. But, yeah, I definitely been going there thinking like, oh, this is, you know, because it wasn't my first time fighting without the headgear. The gloves are definitely a little bit smaller. So the shot I actually stopped the guy with was a shot that I didn't even think was a hard shot. I just was letting my hands go, and the guy was hurt. I'm like, wow. So definitely, you know, now in the pros, you gotta be very alert, because it don't take much to get cracked with some little gloves.
That's right, man. And sometimes you don't see the shot, like sitting at home or even at the fight, you don't see it, and you need to see that replay to be like, oh yeah, no, that was on the chin. Yeah. Yep, that was a nice shot.
Right.
Kind of interesting how that works. So how is that mentally going to work for you? Do you feel like you're more advanced since you actually did get, like you said, no headgear? Are you going to move your career along, or do you a little quicker than most, or do you think we're going to still settle in and do a normal move along, no matter if I did get a chance to fight these guys that are, you know, much better than the guys you're going to be facing maybe in the first 10 fights?
I definitely let my management worry about, you know, who to match me up with. But like I said, I go into every fight knowing that I've been battle tested in amateurs and the pros. Even though the WFC is still considered for amateurs, I go in with a sense of confidence, knowing that whoever they put in front of me, I can adapt. I can find a way to win. You know, a lot of guys when you coming up in the pros, you know, they try to cherry pick your opponents, and you know, I want you to do, you know, they want you to look good. So they put me in there with a guy I'm supposed to knock out or dominate, that's what I do. And if they put me in there with a guy that's supposed to give me a tough fight, I'm gonna prepare myself to go in there and dominate him, and just as I would do anybody else. So I don't really worry about that. I got a great management team with Al Heyman, and whoever they set up for me, I'm definitely prepared for it.
Well, and speaking of that, in your last fight in August 24th, the first round had a little adversity against Christian Navarre. He actually, he was actually kind of a tough guy that stood in there. How'd that feel just to actually get some competition, you know, the first couple of fights? He did go four rounds once, but, you know, like you said, you kind of were taking these guys up. How did it feel to kind of, I didn't know, I tried and tried to look for that knockdown, but I didn't see it. Talk about the knockdown. Was it a real knockdown? Kind of a random one, or did you
bluff
touch? I didn't get a chance to see it,
Chris,
so kind of
knocked that
guy out.
Okay, what it was, I came out maybe a little too, not, I don't want to say too aggressive, I just made a mistake. You know, I'm used to these guys with shots at the 154-pound weight, I'm used to these guys with shots, and they go ahead. So fighting a guy like Christian, he came in 168, he's a heavier guy. So I kind of I don't want to say underestimated, because I take everybody serious. I just, like I said, I made a mistake. I threw a hard body shot and it landed, and I kind of stood there. I almost expected him to go down, and he just came back with a nice short hook. And I didn't like hit the deck. My gloves touched the canvas, but it was definitely a good solid shot. But it didn't do nothing but just let me know, okay, I got to be a little smart. And then from that point on, I dominated him and then stopped him. But he definitely. You know, he called me boxing. You know, everybody that swim get wet. So I took some money, just, you know, you're not invincible. You're in the game. It's like you're not getting out of it. You're going there shooting and reckless. You can click. So it was a learning experience. We got it out of there, and now we're moving forward.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, anything can happen, no doubt about it. Let's get into just a couple more questions. Like I said, I know you got a busy schedule. Got a big fight coming up this weekend, Staples Center, on the Showtime undercard of Mahrez Moreno, which a lot of people are looking forward to. You talked about Al Heyman. Let's talk about that a little bit, man. Al Heyman is behind the scenes working for his fighters. He gets them on network. He's just the guy right now. There's no doubt about it. How does it feel to be affiliated with a guy like that? Not only that, but you have Golden Boy, you know, as well, at least involved helping you promote your career as well, Chris.
But it's a blessing, man. I work very hard in the amateurs to try to get an opportunity to sign with the right type of management. And it's unfortunate that a lot of talented guys come out to amateurs and think about money first and sign with the wrong type of people. So I was thankful to get the opportunity to sign with Al Haymon. I know that he's going to guide me the way that you're supposed to guide a fighter. And at the end of the day, he's going to leave it up to me to do what I'm supposed to do. You know, they're going to match me up with the guys that I'm supposed to be matched up with, and I'm going to do what I need to do in the gym to be prepared to look good when I step out. Bubba Boy and Oscar Loader, great promotional company. Taking nothing away from, you know, the top ranks, the Dan Goosen, the Goosen 2-0, or anybody else, but, you know, Golden Boy, who shows me a lot of support, so, you know, I appreciate it. But at the end of the day, you know, Al Haymon can't fight for me. Oscar De La Hoya can't fight for me. I got to do what I got. I got to do what I'm supposed to do in the gym. And that's how I look at it. You know, a lot of times I hear people say stuff about, like, well, Al Haymon fights are protected and all that. At the end of the day, when you get in position to fight for a world title, you're fighting guys, you're going to have to fight somebody. Before it's over and said and done with, you're going to have to fight somebody. So I go in the gym and prepare for like I'm fighting the champ of the world. You know, if I get an easy fight, great, man. I get the guy out of there. But once I do, somebody that's considered tough, I'm hopefully in the type of condition. Not hopefully, but I know I'll be in the type of condition I'm supposed to be in. I'll be sharp. I'll be ready because I take the craft serious. I know that it don't take much for a guy to get knocked off. I've been seeing too many talented guys lose because they wasn't prepared. So I trust in my team. I trust in Golden Boy, you know, and most of all, I trust in myself. I know what I do in the gym, and I know that when it's time for me to, you know, lace them up, I'm ready. Because if I wasn't, I wouldn't sign the contract itself.
That's right. And like you said, I mean, we could say whatever we want, but, I mean, look at Paul Williams. I mean, he fought everybody under the sun, or tried to at least.
Exactly.
And, you
exactly.
know what I mean?
That's what a lot of people don't understand. A lot of the time, it's not. You know, it depends. The fighters are cut like they used to back in the day. Everybody, I've got to be shy away because I know it becomes a lot of it. It's a business. People got family they want to look after. But being a competitor like I am, once I'm in position, I'm, you know, when you win a world title or you're trying to win a world title, you got to fight somebody good, man. It ain't going to just, you know, so. And hopefully I'll be in a position and I've perfected my craft enough to the point where the guys they consider are good, I can just, you know, dominate them still. But at the end of the day, you gotta, you know, it all starts in the gym, man. Everything else is politics and just a bunch of people talking. We the ones who are punches, so we the ones who get all the praise or get all the hate. So at the end of the day, I gotta do my part and do what I gotta do in the gym to be ready.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you got to do what you got to do, like you said, and, you know, it is what it is, man. I mean, that's, you can't worry. It looks like you got, early in your career, man, it looks like you've definitely put in your homework on your mental state as a boxer. You could only control you, and that's all you got to worry about, man. Let Al and everybody else, I mean, it's perfect to be with Al if you think about it, because like you said, you're not signed to all, you know, like this long deal with just one promotional company, so that's not going to limit you. So, I mean, yeah, it's a good look, man. And let's talk a little bit about the gym, and then we'll get you out of here, man. Let's talk about your current trainer. And also, I know Ron Daniels helps you as well, I believe, still. Mm-hmm. Just talk about the gym and your trainer, and just, you know, talk about maybe some sparring. I believe you spar with Floyd Mayweather and some other. Just kind of talk about some maybe names that people know that, you know, you really kind of learn from sparring, trying to get in some, you know, a lot of young prospects get that good sparring to help them down the line.
Yeah, I actually think it's an opportunity to spar with Floyd because he was the opponent he was getting ready for was Miguel Cotto, and Miguel Cotto's an orthodox fighter. I'm a southpaw. But I did get word that if Floyd decided to fight a Pacquiao or Soldier or any other, you know, tough southpaw, that I would be named the chief sparring partner. So that's a good look. But, you know, I've worked with, you know, another top guy that signed with Al Haymon, Darian Love. That's my big bro. We got to get some good work in. And back at home, I've been training at this place called Ignition, where a lot of professional athletes as far as football and baseball players work out at. And I'm actually the first boxer to start training there, working on some conditioning, just trying to get myself to the next level. Ron Daniels is the guy that started me. You know, he's always part of my development because, you know, I appreciate all that he does for me. Like, even Ron has a family. He's not really interested in being the head guy anymore. So that's why he's not. But I definitely remain loyal to the people who got me where I'm at. But Coach Al Mitchell is my head coach, and I also work with Manny Robles. So I got a lot of support from a lot of different people. I'm just taking little bits and pieces from everybody and trying to develop and get and become the best that I can be. And that's pretty much it. That's pretty much all it is at the end of the day.
There you have it. And before we let you go, man, we'll definitely shout out your website, www.sweetpearson.com. That's Sweet PEARSON. And also, shout out Twitter and Facebook and kind of give a shout out to the fans before we get you out of here, Chris.
Definitely. You can stay connected with me on Twitter at underscore Chris Pearson. Also, I'm on Instagram at Chris Pearson _. I'm on Facebook. I try to interact with everybody, and guys send me messages. I try to always respond in a decent amount of time. So, yeah, man, I appreciate all the support. I'm thankful that people are actually I vow to continuously work hard and try to develop and try to carry myself in the position that I was raised to be, and, you know, and bring some type of positivity to the sport of boxing, because it's a lot of negative stuff that go on at times. But, you know, just because we fighters don't mean we're a bunch of ignorant people. You know, we are people that got families, that love our families, and that's trying to do the best that we can to take care of our families. So, that being said, like, I appreciate all the support, man, and just that tone. I believe there's great things to come from me, and I'm going to continue to work hard and give God the glory and just keep developing and keep getting better.
There we have it. Make sure you check out this weekend, Staples Center. He's on the undercard of a big card. Showtime is having a big card, Mahrez versus Moreno in Staples Center. It'll be a nice look. There'll be a lot of writers there. Definitely a good look for the junior middleweight prospect, Chris Pearson. Thanks a lot, man. Good luck with the weight, and good luck with the fight this week, man. You take it easy.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you.
All right, take it easy. All right, guys. Definitely, if you haven't checked him out on YouTube, make sure you check him out. Like he said, make sure you check him out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, his website, www.sweetpearson.com, PEARSON.com. He's up and coming, man. And, you know, it was nice, actually, for him to get a taste. You know, it's the first guy I've had on from the World Series of Boxing. And you know, he talked about both things on there. You know, he talked about how it really helped him. But it also kind of messed him up when, you know, if you're trying to go back to an amateur style right after that and you're trying to win some bouts or even trying to, you know, get to the Olympics, it can mess with you. So we've heard good and bad from that. Obviously it's a separate game, no doubt about it. I really felt like it was an interesting way to make a little bit of money on the side. And for those, because there's so many guys, especially in the American system, that they don't have that amateur style, man, because that's not what we're raised on right now, you know? And not just that, it's in the amateur style where you get score points, get ahead, and then you just get away from the opponent. That's all you basically do. The Olympics, I mean, not all the fights, of course not. There were some really good fights, but a lot of the fights nowadays, you know, they're boring. And if they're not boring, if it's a good fight, the ending of the fight, the controversial point system, and how you see a clean punch to the body not even get counted, and you know, that type of thing. You could see three punches, one of them get counted, you know, so they're looking into having 10-9 instead of just points, which I do like. At least we know who won a round, you know, instead of getting a big lead in the second half of the fight, let's say somewhere in round two and then round three, you're just running and holding, you know. It's at least that's a step in the right direction. But, you know, it is what it is, no doubt about it. But, yeah, if you haven't checked them out, make sure you check them out. Junior middleweight prospect Chris Pearson, he's a southpaw. He's looking up in the world, and with Al Haynen, man, that's a good look because, you know, he's working with Golden Boy, but he's not exclusively with them. So he's definitely got a bright future on his hands, no doubt about it. And, you know, we'll wish him good luck this weekend on that undercard. It'd be interesting to see if Showtime Extreme has some highlights of his fights, possibly. That'd be nice. Good look for him. I'm going to go ahead and take a drink of water. All right. So lots to talk about. You know, for those who were trying to get in the chat earlier, I really apologize. One, I can barely get the thing open. It's starting to freeze up. I'm going to try to open it up again, but, of course, I was having some Blog Talk issues. You know, last night I tried to schedule the show. It wouldn't allow me. There was some maintenance late night. Okay, no big deal. Woke up today, tried to schedule it. Wasn't letting me schedule any time in here. I mean, not even at 4 o'clock in the afternoon if I wanted to do a show. It just wasn't letting me schedule it. So I was having some issues. Got that figured out, but, you know, it says it allows me to do it at 8 o'clock Central, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific, but the normal start time. But for whatever reason, like a couple weeks ago, same thing, it just wouldn't let me schedule it. And it's like, you know, sometimes you can schedule it too late before your show and then, you know, the slots just fill up. That's not the case, though, because I was trying to schedule it since last night, so I really don't know what happened there, but no matter what, you know, luckily we were able to, you know, get the show going and still have Chris Pearson on. And luckily he was nice enough to delay us a half hour. Definitely glad about that. Also, I'd like to give a shout-out to, let me just look here. I just want to make sure I get this. Raheem Davies, definitely Radio Raheem, most people know from Max Boxing. I'd like to give a shout-out to him. You know, he's the guy who hooked me up with Chris Pearson, so big shouts out to Raheem. Really appreciate that. So we're going to get into a lot of stuff, right? We got a lot of recap, two fights in particular. You know, there is a third fight out there, but I could not find a replay of it anywhere. Actually, it was in a Boxing Scene forum, and I found it. And I was like, all right, I'm watching that tomorrow. I saved the page, got there, and it was already taken off by the user. So supposedly there was a really big fight. Guerrero and, man, I cannot forget his name. Guerrero, and it starts with the L, I think. Either way, I didn't get a chance to see that. But if anybody, you know, wants to send me a link, that'd be great. But I did get to see the Lucien Boutte and Denis Grachev. And also that happened in Canada. This one also got another fight, Marco Huck and Farhat Arislam. And both these fights were solid in their own little way. The Boutte Grachev, not as good as a fight as far as just sheer action and, you know, work rate, but it definitely got into a good fight. But the Huck and Arislam, man, that one was very, very good. And we'll break it down a little bit here. And also, after we get done breaking that down, of course, we're going to preview, debate, and predict the Showtime fight, Abner Mares versus Anselmo Moreno, besides Nonito Donaire, because obviously Nonito took care of Nishioka. These are the other two top guys at that weight class right in there. I mean, these guys are the top-of-line guys, and this should be a really good fight. Very interesting fight, because Mares likes to come forward. Moreno is the boxer, counterpuncher, long and lanky. Should be interesting. Also on that card, a guy that's just up and coming, young champion, Leo Santa Cruz. He just had punishing body shots in his last fight against Eric Morrell. They opened up the quadruple header on September 15th on Showtime. He opened that up, Mexico versus Puerto Rico. The crowd, I'd say more than half the crowd was there already. Yeah, at least more than half. I'd say at least 10,000 people, three-fourths full, more than likely, maybe more than 10,000. But they were really, you know, going for him. The fight before that, he threw 1,300 punches, 1,352, I believe. So Leo Santa Cruz, young fighter, up-and-comer. It sounds like, you know, he's a big 118-pounder. And I saw him standing next to Mares, and he looks bigger than Mares. Not that Mares is a huge guy, but he's not a small guy either. So for those weight classes. So Santa Cruz, it looks like, you know, we'll see what Mares does if he gets through this fight. But it looks like they're trying to hook up, because I just don't know about the Donaire. I don't know about what Mares is going to do as far as signing a contract. I know his contract with Golden Boy is up. I don't know if he'll re-sign. I don't know if he'll go with Top Rank for a couple fights. Who knows what happens there, but Leo Santa Cruz, and also the return of Alfredo Angulo, who was detained for like 7 months, I believe. He's back with a beard and a new look. He's back on that card as well. And obviously we'll talk about the Arislandi Lara Vanez Martirosyan. We had a great debate about it last week. We're gonna break that fight down. This is a tough fight to call. Vladimir Klitschko is fighting this weekend as well. And also Mikey Garcia fights on that HBO undercard of Lara Vanez Martirosyan. He fights Jonathan Barros, who a good, solid, sturdy fighter. He beat Caballero, then lost to Caballero. He went 12 pretty tough rounds with Gamboa. He held up when Gamboa was on a streak and knocking people out, that type of thing. So we'll definitely talk in a variety of ways. Also, just some news. You know, RIP to Carmen Basilio, age 85, former welter and middleweight champ during the 50s and the 60s, all-out action fighter. Beat Sugar Ray Robinson, ended up losing to him, but it was just a great fight, just a great champion and a guy that everybody loved back in the day, just fan-friendly. So RIP to him. We'll talk a little bit more about the 50 Cent and Floyd Mayweather Twitter beef. That's starting to just not make sense. It's just all over the place. And I got to say, 50 Cent, if this is how he's going to promote, I get some beef. But the Andre Ward tweet to me was just ridiculous. It's just different. It's especially with a guy like, it'd be different if you said that to Hank Lundy. Not to say that Hank Lundy should have that said about him, but at least Hank has been known to talk some smack or whatever, you know, or just other guys out there. Like if you said that to, He was a guy as a prospect that still is just now getting a fight. He hasn't fought in like a year and a half. He was with Top Rank. Yeah, I'm just losing it. Anyway, he was trying to be a celebrity before he wasn't even a champion. It'd be one thing to say that, but to Andre Ward, the tweet he left to him trying to get the Durrell fight going, there's a lot of ways you could try to get Andre Durrell and Andre Ward hyped up on Twitter. And I feel like he chose the wrong path, to be honest with you. Just like we thought that Garcia Zab Judah fight is done for January 19th. Looks like the Barclays Center, or at least pretty sure anyway. Sounds like it's pretty close to the venue being booked all the way. Peter Quillen, sounds like he'll be on that undercard. It'll be a triple header, maybe even a quadruple header, but for sure a triple header. They definitely reported that, so looking forward to that fight because I think it's a good fight, and it, you know, we've talked about it at length here. I think it's a good fight. It makes a lot of sense. You got a Brooklyn fighter, Philly against New York. It makes sense. It definitely makes sense. We'll also look at the rest of the fight schedule. Fury Russell Jr. will be in action on Showbox. I mentioned previously Vlad Klitschko is fighting as well. So we'll get into all of that. But right about now, I do want to I want to recap some stuff from this last weekend. You know, once again, these weekends that don't have these huge fights as far as fights that you'll think, oh, man, this is going to be – these are two guys, you know, that are known and it's a great matchup. We didn't have that. We didn't have that. But we had big names that – you know, I mean, Lucien Boutte is a big name. Marco Huck is a big name. Huck is how they say it over there in Germany. Marco Huck, Captain Huck is his nickname. You know, Marco Huck got into a hell of a fight and had a whole lot of issues. We'll talk about it against Farhad Arslan, I should say. And Denis Grachev, that's what it is. I've heard it like three different ways now. But Denis Grachev, you know, he gave Boutte a hell of a fight as well. So do we have the huge, you know, top five guys out of weight class? No, but I'll tell you what, man, we had some good scraps. So we're going to get into the Hook and Arslan fight right away. I'm just going to go ahead and try to open up the chat. Blog Talk is being a little silly tonight. CT, I see you on there. I'm definitely getting, you know, get into some of this recap if you've watched it. Otherwise, we can start to get into, you know, the Showtime and HBO fights as well. But I'm definitely going to get to you in just a moment here, or just a little bit, I should say. I'm going to go ahead and tweet some stuff real quick. But yeah, I'm telling you, man, it was there was some good fights, man. And it took me a while. That's another thing I wanted to talk about. If you haven't seen the Hook Arslan, there's plenty of replays of that out there. That's for sure. But the Boutte and Gratchev, that was a little harder. If you didn't see it originally on the stream, that was a little harder to find. But if you looked, you know, hard enough, you could find it. It's on Vimeo. It's on Vimeo out there. So look for that. But Huck Arslan, there's a bunch of different ones. The one that's 50 minutes long, not in pieces or parts, it's just 50 minutes long. That's a pretty good one. Of course, there is some hesitation in there. But what are you going to do? You know what I mean? It's not a perfect thing. When it's recorded on the streams, it's a replay of the stream, that's a little harder. You know what I mean? That's a little harder to get good and have a clean, you know, clean look at it, to be honest with you. That's a little tougher. So it's a pretty good stream, let's just put it that way. It's not great, but it's not that bad as well. So I'm just trying to reboot something here. Just be a moment. All right, it looks like, well, I'll try it a little bit for those who are trying to get in the chat. I popped it on momentarily, saw a couple people in there, saw Manny as well, but it's just not opening up for me. I'm not sure why it's not doing it, but I'm going to try something here and reboot the whole thing and see if we can get this here. Doesn't look like it. Well, like I said, we'll figure it out, no doubt about it. All right, forget it. We're just going to move on. But I do want to definitely get in to talk about some of these fights this last weekend. Marco Hook, Captain Hook against Farhat Arslan. It was a good fight. And right off the bat, like the other fight, Boutte and Gratchev, it took a little while to warm up. The first three rounds, very slow. Very, very slow. But once they warmed up, man, it was a good fight, that fight. But the Hook Arslan fight was in Germany. You know, Hook's definitely big there. And the first two rounds, I definitely gave to Farhat. Both landed plenty of bombs to the head and body, but really, I mean, Arslan pushed the pace. Both of them landed bombs, but he pushed the pace, and he got him on the rope. We know Huck can do some damage moving around a little bit, putting out his jab, landing that big right hand, and he loves the combo. Once he breaks guards, he loves to just combo and kind of work himself away from the ropes. You know, that can be his style at times. So seeing him on the ropes wasn't the craziest thing. You know, I thought Huck, you know, in his fight against Povetkin, it was a tough fight. I did think Huck beat him, though. I just thought he hurt him more in the fight, and I had him winning that fight, so I thought he got kind of screwed in that one. Good fight, though. Very good fight. But this one, it might be the other way around, just looking at this fight. But like I said, plenty of bombs landed. They just came out just throwing bombs. Big shots. Second round, once again, Arslan, he just landed the bigger and better shots. He was putting in good work on the ropes. He started really sticking them on the ropes, like I said, controlling the pace, pushing the pace. And off a nice, I believe it was a left uppercut, Huck nose started bleeding after that. So third round, though, I don't know if it was the bloody nose or what, but, you know, Huck flurried. He may have stole that third round. He flurried at the end. The biggest thing in this fight, and it was ongoing, Huck was having problems breaking the high and tight guard of Arslan, I should say. He had a really tight guard, very tight guard, but he just couldn't get his shots off sometimes because he couldn't open up that guard. And he'd be on the ropes, and he'd try, and a lot of them were blocked, or he just, like I said, he just couldn't get open. He started going to the body, started throwing in a left hook in there, but to me, just couldn't get off that clean. But I'll get in the third round looking at my scorecard. The fourth round, just because of the flurry at the end, I think he stole that third round. But the fourth round, and this is where the replay has its issues. If you're going to watch this replay, which I suggest you do, it's a really good fight. But the replay, fourth round to me kind of froze up and it was a little choppy. So I didn't score it because if you didn't see the action the whole round, it kept freezing up. And like I said, when it would, it kind of be choppy anyway. So I didn't score it. I'll just put it that way. Didn't score it. But the fifth round, just action right off the bat. And they just got into it. And it looked like Huck was starting to wear down from those clubbing right hands to the head and body on the inside. And, he, you know, Arslan had some good left hooks and uppercuts. I mean, on the inside, he really won this fight, I believe. And, like I said, he had him against the ropes. He had that high guard up, and he would just drop uppercuts on him and right hands and hooks. And, I mean, he put in some just devastating body work, no doubt about it. So midway through the fight, you saw Huck wear down the sixth round. He was controlling the pace again. He was just landing thumping shots. He kept backing him up. Seventh round, closer round, but, you know, Huck kept getting back in the ropes. He kept getting shoved in the ropes. So you'd see, like, Huck maybe land some combos finally and get some shots on, but then, bang, he just come back and you know, he really started thumping him, definitely thumping him with bigger shots. Seemed like in the eighth and ninth round, whatever it was, Huck got busier. Now, you know, he would land some good combos, and it seemed like Arslan maybe land the bigger shots, but I felt in the eighth and ninth round, he just got busier. He definitely got busier. He began to just let his punches go. And like I mentioned earlier, he'd be on the ropes, and then he'd just punch himself out of there. And at the end of the round, every round, the crowd's cheering whether he's winning the rounds or not because it started to become a good fight. So I don't know if it was just the nose that was bleeding. I think it could have something to do with that. It's hard, you know, if he messed up his nose, he got a lot of blood. Sometimes it's hard. People start to, you know, fighters start to kind of lose their way as far as breathing, and they can't, you know, breathe properly. But to me, it can't be just that because it was really those just thudding shots. He was landing a bunch of them and left hooks near the end of the fight that were just ringing true. I mean, you know, he did tighten it up. I had it 5-3 going into the ninth round. 5-4, I gave Huck the ninth round. I'm not going to sit there and say, you know, that Huck just got, you know, a gift, because I don't know if he got a 100% gift. I mean, he definitely upped his tempo and really just started throwing his shots. He had no, like I said earlier, he had no choice. He just had to throw his punches and just try to get him on busyness because he wasn't hurting him and he wasn't slowing him down. So I give it to Arslan. Arslan, I think, won the fight. The scorecards were two of them were 115-113. Then there was a 117-111. I just don't see that. I don't see that one. I don't know where he got it from. But, you know, it is what it is. But good action fight, fun fight to watch. But I felt like, you know, as much as I felt like, you know, Huck, and we call him Huck here, but Huck is what he says, Huck. You know, I thought he beat Povetkin because he landed the bigger shots, and he had Povetkin stumbled and tired in the fight. So I gave him that. Good fight, tight fight, but I gave him that. This is kind of the opposite. I didn't think he won this fight. I thought Huck, you know, maybe, you know, it is what it is. I mean, he got it back, obviously, you know, considering I felt he got the short end of the stick in the last fight, but I don't know, man. It was interesting. Let's put it that way. It was a good fight, solid fight. Cruiserweight division, man, just keeps producing fun action fights, and that's not what you get out of heavyweight fights a lot of times. So at least we got that going, you know, in that fight. That was definitely a good fight, but, you know, I really don't know if how many, you know, I just a lot of people thought that he got a gift. And in a sense, I did. I did think the same thing. I mean, you know, it wasn't just one-sided all the way, but I felt if you're good, in a tight fight, what's the difference in a tight fight? What would be the difference? Well, who landed the bigger shot? And it's not like Huck was, when I say he was busier just in those rounds, but overall, it's not like his output was just draining him. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it is what it is. It is what it is. But I gotta say that Hook lost the fight in my eyes. Wouldn't mind a rematch down the line either. That was a good fight. On Welk TV, Lucien Boutte returning from his knockout defeat by the hands of Carl Froch in Nottingham, England. This is his first time back against Denis Grachev. Grachev, who's 12-0 going in this fight, he beat Islam Salak, a guy that, you know, the Black Russian. A lot of guys were talking about, you know, how he's going to make all this, you know, hay at 175. And, I'm sorry, 168. So, you know, I'll tell you what, man, Grachev earned that win, obviously, because he knocked him out. But, you know, he only has 13 fights, but it's still a good fight because the guy's coming off a good win, and he can punch a bit. He can put his punches together. He's got a good right hand. In a way, he has a style, if you look at it, it's similar enough to Carl Froch, if that's what you're going for as well. Not a crazy top-of-the-line guy, but a guy that deserved a good fight off a good win. So let's get into this. The first three rounds were slow. First round, the only thing that happened is Boutte got cut in his left eye from a headbutt. Other than that, you know, it was slow. I gave it a 9-9. I couldn't, there's nothing I could say. I mean, obviously, if I was a judge, I would have said 10-10 because it's a 10-point must system, but I'm not a judge. So I could score it however the hell I wanted. 9-9 is what I said. Just was nothing happened. If nothing happens, no one deserves a 10 in my book. It's a 9-9. So a lot of people don't want to do draws. I just don't see who won that first round, to be honest with you. I gave the second round to Boutte. I thought, you know, it was a slow round, no doubt about it again. But he did manage to get a few lefts in there, and he managed to start pumping his jab. Did the jab land a bunch? No, it didn't land a bunch. But he at least got some shots off. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Like I said, another slow round again, but I gave Boutte the third. I thought this nice left uppercut and straight lefts, a few straight lefts, really. I thought that was the difference. He really started to get in his groove going. It seemed like it was starting to warm up. The fourth round was the best round of the fight. I just thought that the big right hands, were the difference in that round by Grachev. Grachev started landing that right hand. It just started getting going finally. It took him a while to get going, and he kept it going. It was a close round, that fifth round. Boutte earlier, it seemed like he was, you know, had it early. But Grachev, he took the control of the fight right back over, you know, and he was, Boutte was trying to hold. He came back with some power of his own, but to me, he was pushing the pace. And kind of like effective aggressiveness, like Harold Letterman says a lot. You know, to me, he was just pushing the pace. Boutte got it back to me in the sixth round because he landed the better shots in that round. He landed the better counters. He's got that hand speed where he can just let it loose, and that's what he did. And really, in the fifth and sixth round, you could see good close rounds, but the fight, it started heating up. So I had it 3-2-1. For Boutte going in to the seventh round. Now, I gave the seventh round to Boutte. I thought he landed the cleaner, bigger shots, but some of that round was controlled by Grachev, you know, that effective aggressiveness, that come forward. And I gave it to eighth round Boutte as well. So he had a nice lead after eight, 5-2-1. And if people can't handle the tied round, I guess 5-3. I don't really know at that point. But I thought that, Boutte, he just started really landing some really nice shots. You know, he, the end of the round is when he started getting the uppercuts, some right hooks. But, you know, it's funny because they gave Boutte the seventh and eighth, but it did seem that Boutte was getting a little tired. You're starting to fade a bit. And in the sixth round, you know, the combinations, the right hands to the head, the left hooks to the body, just being the aggressor, to me, it looked like Gotcheff has stole the momentum back a little bit in the ninth round. And you know, Boutte was boxing on the outside real nice in the last two rounds before the eighth and the ninth, and it seemed like some shots were starting to get to him. And there was times where, you know, I heard about it, and this Boutte-Gotcheff fight, like I mentioned earlier, I saw a couple of new callers. Go ahead and press one if you want to join in. Otherwise, if you guys are just kind of listening, definitely check out this Boutte-Gotcheff. It's on Vimeo. And, you know, so just Google Boutte-Gotcheff and put Vimeo in there. You'll find it, because on the YouTube, I couldn't find it. I actually found this this replay of a guy that just filmed the fight watching his TV, right? So I was like, oh, I got that. Nice. And by the time I kind of turned off my computer, did something, or actually I had to go to work, I was going to watch it when I got home. By the time I came home, the thing had been deleted. So I was actually going to resort to watching it on someone filming it at home, watching the fight on their big screen. So I was like, hey, I just want to see this fight. I don't care how I see it. But now it's definitely available on Vimeo, the whole fight. You obviously have commercials in there, but hey, what are you going to do? It's free. But getting back to it, you know, that ninth round in the tenth round, you know, the aggressor. He was being the effective aggressor. I mean, maybe in the tenth round you could say Boutte tried to steal the round at the end of the tenth round with some really good flurries, and I'll give you that. But to me, the combination punching when he'd have him on the ropes, the body shots, the right hands, just overall, like I said, being the aggressor, to me, he won that round. To me, he won those rounds. So now if I'm looking at it, I had it 5-2-1. Now I'm at 5-4-1 heading into the 11th round. And, you know, Gotcheff came forward. He smothered Boutte. And to me, Boutte just wasn't active enough in that 11th round to give it to him. He just wasn't. So I had him, you know, get right back into it. And to me, the bigger shots landed, you know, to me, Boutte ended it by you know, he kind of just landed the bigger shots in that last round. And he had his hands down, and he just started swinging. He just started swinging for the fences and using his speed and just saying, I'm at home. It's a tight fight. I need to leave a good impression for my fan base if they think I'm going to have a chance in the spring against Carl Froch. And in the fight, obviously, and in the judges' hands. And at 116, 112, 115, 113, I'm okay. I had it 6-5-1. I guess if I look back at that first round, I could have it, you know, I could have it a different right there. I could have it 6-6. I don't know. I could have it 7-5, you know, looking past that. But I did have Boutte pulling it away, but 118, 110. Last week we had a couple weeks ago, Malignaggi 118-110 in a fight that neither of them should have that kind of score. It's getting ridiculous. I mean, are you serious? Like 118-110 in that fight? I thought Boutte did enough to get the victory, but I just can't believe that that's actually how it went down. It was really ridiculous to me, to be honest with you. I just couldn't see it. I just couldn't see it. But both good fights in their own little ways, little different ways. You know, it took a while for the Boutte fight to get going. But once it got going, it was very intriguing. And I thought it was a good guy, the Gotcheff, you know, who pulled a nice upset in April over a guy that a lot of people were saying, hey, nobody wants to fight this guy. He fought him. He won. if you look at him, he has a style. I'm not going to – nobody has the same style, obviously, but he likes to throw the right hands. The way he even throws a punch, I don't think he jabs. Nothing like Frotch, of course, but the right hand, just the way he delivers it, there's shades of Dennis Krejcik, of Carl Frotch, shades of it. Not a lot, but there is something in there. So good opponent to come back to, I thought, for Butte. We'll see if Butte can keep it going. But to me, he did look like he was wearing it down a bit. It looked like he was trying to hold a couple times, like he had been shook a little bit. Not as hurt as a lot of people were saying, to, like, in my opinion. I don't think he was really that hurt. But, you know, it is what it is. People are going to say whatever they're going to say. But I didn't feel like he was buzzed that much, but or hurt, I should say. I think he was more buzzed. But there were some times where, you know, Gotchev hit him with some good shots. It was a good, tight fight. Well, definitely, if anybody wants to, like I said, go ahead and press 1C. I see you on there. A couple people just hung up. There's probably six people there. If you want to go ahead and press 1 and join in, if not, that's cool, no problem. Otherwise, CT, if you want to talk a little bit, if you got a chance to see this Butte fight or the Huck fight, we could talk about that. Otherwise, I'm going to get into preview and debate and predictions for the Abner Mares and Anselmo Moreno fight, which is a tough one to call, man. You got the classic style here, you know, boxer versus puncher, a guy that can, you know, Moreno is a defender. He likes to counter punch. He's long and lanky. Mares has already said, you know, that one of the keys to the fight will be just being patient. So, and I think that's a smart thing. We're going to see how patient he can get and how accurate of a puncher he can be against a guy like Moreno. I think that if you're going to fight Nonito Donaire, and this is nothing against Anselmo Moreno, hey, he could win the fight. I think it's a really tough fight for him, to be honest with you. The odds makers have it the same way. I think they have, you know, Mara is a slight favorite, but I think it's only plus 125 for Moreno. So it's not like he's a 3 or 4 to 1 underdog here, you know. So it's a tough fight. Very winnable fight for either fighter. But if Mara wants to fight Nonito, it's good to fight an awkward, defensive, pretty good hand speed type guy who likes to counter punch, the counter uppercuts were just nasty. I think it was Del Rosa or something like that. De La Rosa, I think he was fighting. But anyway, we'll get into that. We'll get into Arislandi Lara versus Vanez Matarosyan too. A lot of people going back and forth. That is, you know, the battle of the O's, really. Both guys undefeated. I mean, Arislandi Lara has a loss against Paul Williams on his record, but we all know. You know, we all know. Carlos Molina, you know, had a draw with him, though. So I guess many people think that Molina won that fight. So either way, this is a fight to fight Canelo. So we'll get into that. CT, I'm going to go ahead and bring you in. What's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Chris? I'm just sitting here and just trying to get through this bad weather for the next couple of days.
Man, I'll tell you what. You know, my hearts go out to the whole East Coast, man. They're just a mess with that Hurricane Sandy and 900-mile cloud range, and it's really just been tough. A lot of people still, you know, no heat, no electricity, and, you know, my heart and prayers go out to everybody on there. I mean, what a crazy time, and a crazy time for such a storm like that late in the season, man.
Yeah, and it just started snowing today. It's going to snow today until tomorrow. I think it's going to stop tomorrow, so kind of crazy. Yeah.
That sounds like Minnesota weather, dude.
I know, right?
You know, and today it was like 45, dude, and it's supposed to be like high 40s all week. We're freaking out. We're like, man, what? No snow, huh? Okay, well, we'll take it. did you get a chance to see Butte or Huck fight at all? Did you get to see those streams or anything like that?
I didn't get a chance to see the fights, but I pretty much read a little bit of it. From what I read, they're both close fights. But from what I'm reading about the Butte one, I don't know, it seems like a lot of people, you know, what I've been reading, he's not really the same.
Right.
You know, fighters who get, you know, hurt like the way he did against Frotch and getting blown away, sometimes, you know, you can come back from it, and sometimes you can't. It depends, but he might not ever be the same fighter again. Who knows? And as far as Huck is concerned, you know, I think he did a good job as a cruiserweight. I would like to see him face. I'm not sure. Has he faced what's the guy's name? Hernandez before? I know he fought a little bit. Okay.
He fought Cunningham. Which was, you know, that was a loss. That was his only loss for, I think that's his only loss at cruiserweight, is Cunningham.
Okay.
I'm with you there because I like that Hernandez, man.
Yeah, but from what I hear you were saying, you know, both fights were pretty close.
Yeah, they were. They were very tight and they're worth seeing. I mean, the Huck, Arslan, it's out there. It's been out there for a while. I'm not going to lie. A lot of the replays that are out there that aren't that good because a lot of people are watching on a stream and just recorded that, and so that's the version you get. But there is a 50-minute one where there's no parts or no, you know, nothing like that. No, not a couple. It's just 50 minutes, a little over 50 minutes. That's a pretty good one. That Lucien Boutte fight, though, that was much harder to find. And like I said, I literally was about to watch. I'm such a rube and a, you know, just a hardcore boxing fan. I was going to watch a damn replay of some dude in his living room recording the fight on the TV. You know what I'm saying? You know, who cares? Like, I want to watch this thing, so that's how I'm going to do it. And that thing even got taken off. So I did see it on Vimeo. I did see it on that, though, and that's a perfect – that was actually a very nice, tight picture. I think that's illegal on that one, you know? So, you definitely check that out if you get some time, and people out there, if you get some time. Let's get into this Abner Mares and Selmo Moreno fight, man. This is, like I mentioned, the classic boxer versus puncher. When I call Mares a puncher, it's his style. Does he have one punch knockout, not necessarily, but he's a guy that breaks you down. He's a guy that goes to the body. He's a guy that loves to just scrap. You know, he's got a good right hand. He's got good, very accurate puncher for a come-forward fighter. He has a good jab as well, but he likes to just, you know, mix it up. There's no doubt about it. He likes to mix it up. So, I don't know, man. This is going to be a good fight, and it's a tough fight. This is a really tough fight, and this could go either way. And like I was saying, I think it's a great – and I hate to use the word, like, practice in this fight because Anselmo could definitely win this fight. But as far as the style goes, a guy that likes to counterpuncher, a guy that can defend himself, it's a great – in a taller, longer, lankier for the weight class especially, it's a good fight for him. Because Mares has hopes of Nonito down the line, and this is a great – if you're going to fight Nonito, I think this is a good fight for you to get through if you can get through it. What are your thoughts on this one, man? How do you see this one breaking down, and who do you see coming out of this one, CG?
I don't know, man. It was just – it's a fight that's very tough to break down. And I think, you know, Mares needs to really think about Moreno because he's definitely a threat. This guy is – so awkward, Chris. I watched the way he fights. You know, he's so awkward, and his foot movement is incredible. The way he could just, you know, dart in and out with punches, and his defensive skills is amazing. I mean, I don't think, you know, Mara's ever fought a fighter that's like Moreno. So, you know, with that type of style, it's very hard. I think when I come down to breaking it down, I think Mara's is going to have to, you know, be a little bit more aggressive. I know he's aggressive, but he's going to me, I think he's got to be a little bit more aggressive than he usually is and go to the body right away. He's got to slow this guy down, take his legs away, offset Moreno's rhythm, because that's what I think Moreno does. He in his own way, he shuts his opponents down with his leg, you know, his movement and his speed and his awkwardness. So I think it's very hard for me to break down, but I think it's going to be one of those fights where Mars is more telling punches is going to tell the, you know, to tell in a fight, and I think it's going to throw the judges into Mares' way. I think he's going to get a close, very close decision.
Like you said, it's going to be a hard-fought fight. He does have a really slick style, and Abner's not the top. I mean, he's not, considering his height, he's not he's not that tall, is what I'm trying to say, and he's got decent reach for his size, but this is going to be a little bit of an issue, and I actually want to look at him up right now just to make sure I got this height and see the difference of it. So I'm going to actually go to boxing record right now and just make sure I got this measured out. Yeah, it's about 2 inches as far as height and like 3.5 inches as far as length. So the reach, he definitely has, you know, he definitely has advantage in the reach, no doubt about it. And you know, this guy, I guess one thing is, you know, he basically fought 118 a lot of his career. He was even a 115-pounder as well. So maybe the fact that it's not like, you know, he only has 12 knockouts and 33 wins, okay? So it's not like this guy, you know, could counter and put you on your butt left and right, no doubt about it. And, you know, his only loss is a split decision in 2002, quite a long time ago. So he's on a winning streak, no doubt about it. You know, but this guy, man, I'm really stuck on this fight because of the style. I'm just wondering if he has enough pop. He showed it against that De La Mora guy. You know, he knocked him down a couple of times in that fight early, and then midway through ended up finishing him off in the 9th round. But this is going to be a different style for him, and I think that Marez saying he has to be patient is right there. He definitely has to be patient. Marez has had a heck of a run here since he hit the scene. You know, he's fought Yanni Perez. I thought he, you know, it was a draw, but I did think Marez won that fight 7-5. And 7-5, you know, it's either way. So a draw is a draw. I felt like he won it, but it was a tight fight. Victor Chinian had Becco twice. I mean, this guy, you know, in Morrell, a guy that's, you know, a more faded, but at that weight, he needed to get kind of a tester fight in there. You know what I mean? So I think it's a good fight for him. Different style, though. I'm going to go ahead and bring from BoxingSocialist.com and, of course, Carcino for Life on YouTube. What's going on, Carcino? How you doing, buddy? Carcino, hello? Are you there, man? Oh, there we go. How you doing, man? How you feeling?
Oh, I'm good.
On this Marez Moreno fight, man, it's definitely a come forward against a defensive type fighter. Moreno is pretty slick, man. He may not have all the power, but it seems like he's got some pop when he punches. What are your thoughts on this fight? Who do you think is going to come out ahead, man?
I think Marez is going to walk him down when it gets later in the fights, but I've been listening to Moreno, man. He's saying he sees some flaws in Marez's style that he knows he can get some shots off, and he's telling everybody like he got the power. Like, I got power, you know. People gonna see it. You know, it was kind of like when people doubted the sweep he had any power. You know, they was like, oh well, he can box, but he don't have any power. He was start dropping guys. So I don't know, man. I got Marez to walk him down because I just think he's too big and he's just too offensive. He lets his hands go more. And I think if he, you know, he can see that he can take Moreno's power, and he might just try to walk him down and just swarm him with activity. So I'm going to take Marez by a unanimous decision, but I'm definitely going to watch this fight.
Yeah, man. I mean, this is a style of fight that a lot of old schoolers like, man, because, you know, neither of them have crazy knockout power or anything like that. So it's really one game against the next game. And, you know, I think you're right, though. I definitely agree with what you're saying as far as how you're breaking it down. And, you know, Moreno, he doesn't have a lot of power. I mean, he's saying it maybe, and he definitely showed it some in his last fight. And, man, he was hitting Vic with some clean shots too. So the guy has pop. You know, it seems like maybe, and I've heard him talk about this in the interview as well, that it seems like he's sitting down on his punches a little bit more instead of trying to punch and move at the same time. Sometimes that turns into an arm punch, but his uppercut counter shots are pretty nasty, and he's a guy that doesn't have to be on his bike the whole time either. Don't get me wrong, he moves a lot, but he can also do his little shoulder roll, or at least roll with the punches and counter back. So, It's going to be a different style for him. He's got the reach for a boxer on the outside, a defensive guy. You know, he definitely, the last couple fights, it seems like his work rate has came up. He's got to, that's a great point, Garcia, that you brought up, because he's got to have work rate in this fight, because if he doesn't, if he's not the busier fighter, he's going to have issues on the scorecard, of course, but he's also just going to have issues with Mahrez, because Mahrez, man, come forth fighter, accurate puncher, has a great jab when he wants to use it. He gets hit plenty, no doubt about it. Most come forth fighters do. But I think you're right here. I think Abner Mahrez at some point is just going to hit him with something that he just can't get away from. And then the combos, you know, in the body, you know, I think if he's longer than you and lankier than you, you can go attack the body. And that may be something, you know, the fact that, you know, seeing him in these interviews saying, I got to be more patient and just keep working and working and just throw punches until they start to land, I think that's smart, you know. You don't want to go over the top, like you said. You want to be aggressive and walk them down, but you don't want to go over the top because the guy's a counterpuncher and can, you know, score on you. But I do think, I mean, like I said, this is a plus 125 for Moreno, so he's barely an underdog. It's a good, solid fight, and I think that if Mahrez can get through this, that definitely puts something on tape to prepare for a guy like Nonito. Now, I'm not trying to say Donaire and Moreno are in the same boat, but he's a counterpuncher. He's long and lanky, and he's got good hand speed. Not Nonito's hand speed, not Nonito's counterpunching ability and power, obviously, behind that, and speed. I mean, come on. Not too many people are as fast. But I think it's a great fight for him because, one, that's what's there for him. This is one of the best guys that he can fight right now, so obviously, the Nonito fight, we'll see if it happens in the future. But as far as fights go in this weight class, it's a hell of a fight. It's a good matchup. I do think it'll be like a 7-5, maybe 8-4 if he hits him with something or if he starts wearing, you know, if he catches him with something or if he starts wearing him off to the body and Moreno just can't get away, then maybe an 8-4 type thing. But I think it'll be a 7-5 fight. I see a lot of competitive rounds. But, yeah, work rate. Like you said, Garcino, it'll be key because Mahrez loves to just keep coming and keep coming, whether you punch him or not. And most of the times he can get hit plenty. So I see a two-way fight, but I do see Mahrez as well coming out on top. You know, we got into it last week, so we don't need to break it down too much because, you know, like I said, we got into it last week a lot too. But Arislandi Lara Banez, Marta Rosen. Now, this is a fight that last week was just going to be an option away from fighting Canelo. Now, this week, Solomon says, no, it's actually going to be next. I don't know what the hell is going on. We'll see exactly how that turns out. You know, because Solomon said, no, you can't fight Mayweather. Well, hold on. It wasn't for sure Mayweather. Or maybe it was, you know. It makes you think, like, how the hell do you know it's going to be just Mayweather? Because he's like, well, you can't fight Mayweather. He's got to fight one of these guys first. So that's either, you know, being scared of, you know, Canelo losing too early. I don't know what that is, but it's just kind of funny. Maybe Top Rank put some pressure on him. I don't know exactly what happened there, but it's kind of funny. A week later, and, you know, a week after, it could probably be the, you know, the same thing. So who knows, but Arislandi Lara Banez, Marta Rosen, both fighters have flaws. Lara's fought the better talent, no doubt about it. Break this fight down for us, Garcino. Who do you got in this one?
Well, I think everybody in the world knows who I got, but I'll do it as the reason I have these guys. Now, these both fighters are excellent. So I love both fighters. But the reason I'm picking Banez is because of the experience. He's been in this game since 2006, probably earlier. He's been in situations like this. He knows how to win these fights. Where Arislandi Lara really hasn't been in too many big fights, but he looked great against Paul Williams, who was a big guy, but he does not use a jab. And he doesn't apply the certain pressure with the jab. He just comes forward. and uses his body and his presence and his activity as his presence. Where in this kind of fight here, he's going to have a guy coming behind the jab. And he's going to have a guy who tries to command the ring in Vanes. And he's gonna use that because he sees that in his last fight, Laura had problems with the guy that was applying all that pressure on him. He had to shell up most of the time, and he couldn't get off, and he wasn't comfortable. So fighting Cuban fighters, that's basically how you beat them, is to make them uncomfortable in the ring with activity, but controlled activity, to where they're uncomfortable. They're not able to time you because you're coming behind the jab. So that's what I see Vanes doing. I think he's going to have a good strategy. He's got a chip on his shoulder. You know, he's been passed over a lot. And this is his time, you know, and this is his shot. And I want to see him get it, prove everybody wrong. Laura can come back from this. But Laura, what he's going to try to do is get low, shoot body shots, and throw good overhand counter shots with his right hand. He has a very deceptive right hand. He can throw it at a slow speed, and he got a real fast one. But he's got a looping overhand right that he throws, too, that you don't see. If you're throwing your jab, he can throw it right over your jab. And they call Paul Williams by surprise a lot of times, too.
Sure does.
He'll get under your punches. He's got a wide stance. He take some control of the ring and kind of sit down on some punches. But I've never seen him in there with a guy who can control him with a jab and who's big. You know, Vanes is bigger than Paul Williams. He's really big.
Yeah, he is.
For a guy that's fighting at 154, when he fills out, he's going to be quite big. And I don't think Vanes has fought a guy his size. Laura, I don't think he's fought a guy his size. And Eric Landa is going to be in a different world, probably fighting this big guy in front of him.
I think Vanes
is
going to
put on the show.
Paul Williams is a good 6'1", long arms. So, I mean, he fought him.
But it's a difference. Paul Williams doesn't really commit to a jab. He throws like a half jab. And then he comes in. His mechanics are all wrong. He has great athleticism, and that's what helps him get through his fight. He has a great conditioning and activity.
Right.
That's how Martinez and guys who with short arms were able to reach him, because his hands are always down and he's always thinking offense. And he throws short punches. He don't throw all the punches all the way through. You know, he's just like a guy that's just do a lot of mid work. They just throw punches midway. They don't really follow all the way through. You know, he throws his jab. It's nothing on it. It's not even. Nothing committed to the jab. It's just like he flicks his hand out. It's like nothing on the punches. So for Paul Williams, you can sit there and time him because you know what he's going to do. And he's going to walk in with his hands low. So it was just target practice for Laura. He was able to use Paul Williams' aggression against him the same way Martinez did. He just said, well, this guy's going to do all the work. He's going to bring the fight to me. So I don't have to tire myself getting out of the way because he's not coming in with a jab to just disrupt me. I can see everything he's doing. Then, bam, you can just turn the lights out or shoot a counter right and start your momentum. I mean, the guy from Puerto Rico beat him, Quintana, beat him the same way.
Yeah, that's a good point. Definitely no doubt about a different style, but at least he had been in the ring, you know, with that size. But the size will be a difference. I think you make a great point there, no doubt about it. If you're just tuning in or if you want to go ahead and join in, we see some callers that have come in the last couple of minutes and also some that have been there. Go ahead and press 1 if you want to join in. If you're just getting on and you didn't hear the interview earlier with junior middleweight prospect Chris Pearson, who's fighting on the undercard of the fight we've been talking about, Mares Moreno, Staples Center, L.A., Showtime, definitely check, you know, his career out, no doubt about it. He's got a great pedigree, and you know, definitely worth checking out, no doubt about it. He's an up-and-comer with Al Haymon, so he's got a good look there. And also, Arsino, in just a second, or in a little bit here, I'm going to talk about this 50 Cent Floyd Mayweather. It just keeps getting worse. And then it just takes a bizarre turn that I just don't understand. And not just that, but here's the message to 50 Cent. If you're going to be a promoter, there's a lot better ways to tweet Andre Ward than how you tweeted him. It just, there's so many other ways to get Andre Durrell and him hyped up on Twitter. There's so many ways to say you should make that fight. And we're going to get into that because I really felt like it's like, all right, dude, like, come on, man. Like, how are you going to say that to Andre Ward? It just doesn't make any sense. I get that you're trying to match your fighter, but, I mean, there's a bunch of different ways to say that rather than how he chose to say that. CT, man, what are your thoughts on this Lara Martirosyan fight, man? This is a title eliminator for the WBC for Canelo Alvarez. Both fighters have been trying to fight Alvarez and get big fights. Martirosyan hasn't gotten as big as, you know, fights. He was going to fight Angulo. He pulled out of that. He didn't want to fight him in Mexico. Lara's obviously fought Carlos Molina, Paul Williams, some solid vets as well. He has a better resume. But, you know, he has Molina. A lot of people said he beat him, or at least, well, I mean, it was a draw. What are your thoughts on this fight, man? Because this is a tough fight, and when you get two young fighters like this, anything can happen in this fight just because how they're matched and the fact that they know what's at the end, you know, what the prize is in the end. And that's a fight with Canelo. What do you think, CT?
I agree with you 100%. I think, you know, both of these guys know what's at stake. You know what I mean? They're both up-and-coming junior middleweights. They're both very hungry, and they both got something to prove. When I talk to people, you know, that I'm near that watch both fighters, everybody thinks that Lillard's going to blow Martirosyan out. I don't see it that way. I think it's going to be very competitive. I think both fighters bring a lot to the table. The only thing I see about Lara, you know, when he shells up, you know what I mean? He doesn't really throw back. And that's why I think it's going to – Martirosyan will take over in some extent to the fight because he has a better work rate. I do think Martirosyan has a better jab. He has a pretty good right hand as well. The only thing about Martirosyan, his defense is a little leaky himself, you know what I mean? And I can see midway to late in the fight, you know, Lara timing him, one of them straight left hands, and hurting Martirosyan bad where he's not going to be able to, you know, come back from that. I can see a late-round stoppage for Lara. But I think it's going to be very competitive back and forth while it lasts. But I see a knockout by Lara late.
Interesting, man. Interesting. And that would be a hell of an ending if that's how it went out. No matter what, we're definitely, I just feel like we're going to get a pretty solid fight no matter what, just because, like I said, the hype for what's coming next. And we'll see if they actually do get it next. Like I said, it's kind of gone back and forth with that. So I don't really know if they're truly going to get it next. But we'll figure it out. Jose Suleiman, you know, he got the fight. You know, he got them two to match up off the purse bid, one by Top Rank. And then, you know, 10 days out said, oh, by the way, that's not going to be next. He's going to have an option. And, you know, Bob Arum had been like, are you serious, dude? And especially the fighters. They're like, man, this is supposed to be next. So now we'll give him an option. Then he has to fight. But it is quite funny how that works. And then now this week we heard, no, actually, he can't fight Mayweather. He's got to fight one of these. So we'll see how it figures out. I mean, if they get a big fight, my guess is he's going to take that money, Suleiman. But we'll see how that goes. But it's a hell of a fight, too, man. I'm back and forth because I've seen both. I've seen both sides struggle, Lara and Martirosyan. Martirosyan had a tough fight against Uma. And Uma's a solid guy, solid fighter, no doubt about it. Tough fight. But then you could say Carlos Molina, you know, beat Arislandi Lara, or at least he got fought him to a draw. So there's a tough fight, too, you know. So it's tough because Arislandi Lara, man, he's really hit or miss. He'll have a couple of fights where he's looking real clean and countering, like against Paul Williams. That left hook was just, I mean, he hit him with the left hand, left straight hand, left hook. He hit him with whatever the hell he wanted to. ended up losing the fight. It was like a 10-2 fight. The work rate Paul Williams got, you know, you come forward and throw a bunch of punches, that just equals rounds to people, you know, judges, I should say, but people too watching the fight. But watching that fight, you had to look at Arslan. He won the fight. We're about to go off on the live stream here. Big shouts out to everybody that called in and listened live on the show. Big shouts out to 154-pound prospect Chris Pearson. He'll be fighting on the undercard. He's got a big pedigree from the amateur ranks. You should check him out. He's got some video, got a lot of information out there. Make sure you check him out on his website, www.sweetpearson.com, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Make sure you check him out. He'll be fighting in L.A., Staples Center, on the undercard of the Showtime fight, Mahrez versus Moreno. But Marta Rosen, you know, not too long ago against, what was it, Roman, I believe, he got knocked out in the first round, got caught with something big, and then just came storming up after that. So that has, you know, a couple years ago on the, I believe it was the Cotto Foreman undercard in Yankee Stadium, he fought Mean Joe Green from Philly, Joe Green, and both unbeaten guys at that time. He you know, he had his jab going, definitely had his jab going, and he could put his punches together. And Joe Green just was no match for him right there. So Marta Rosen, considering how many fights he's had, you got to give the resume, I believe, to Arslan Ilara. But both of them have shown definitely flaws. And when you get Lara in the counterpunching mode, you know, if he can get his shots off and get out of there, and sometimes he does it one shot at a time, too many times, but the, like people have mentioned, and something that you got to mention with him, those earmuffs. Sometimes he'll let a guy just get off on him for a while and then be like, okay, it's my turn. Well, that's not how it works. You can't do that. You can't. Maybe you could do that early in a fight or midway of a fight where you're trying to wear a guy down. You see Floyd Mayweather do that once in a while. He'll let a guy go off for 90 seconds. But I wouldn't call it an earmuff. You know, a lot of times he's just on the rope, shoulder rolling, slipping, and not getting hit with a ton there. You know what I mean? There's been a lot of guys that have flurried 50 straight punches on Mayweather through the years, and he's just sitting there, and it's almost like he wants him to punch himself out a little bit, and then, bam, he takes advantage of the last 90 seconds or the last minute of the round. So I'm really stuck on this. I'm going to admit, I've been stuck on it since it's been made. I'm glad that it's got made. Both these guys need big fights, especially Marta Rosen, you know, and let's see if this leads to the big fight against Canelo. But I am going to go with Arslan Ilara. I think the speed may be a little too much. I think the speed with his power, it seems like it's easy to get lost, I will say that. I mean, Ronald Hearns is a guy that is not a great fighter at 154, okay? But he shouldn't be getting knocked out in the first round either, per se. You know what I mean? So you can look at Lara in this last little run before Freddie Hernandez, who actually gave him a good fight, and Molina as well, coming forward with fundamentals. Freddie was coming forward and landed big body shots. So the body shot is open. So, you know, if he's covering up, look for Marta Rosen. Definitely get to that body. But something tells me Lara's going to bounce back. He had a really so-so performance after being on a knockout run with guys that he should be finishing, no doubt about it. So I'm going with Lara by decision. I think he's going to catch him with something, is what I'm thinking. I think he's going to catch him with something enough to turn the fight, maybe knock him down. I just think that speed in the counter shots is going to be the difference in the fight. And another good fight, you know, Garcia Salido is a fight that hopefully happens next year, but Jonathan Barrows is a good, sturdy guy. He fought Caballero tough. He actually beat him and then lost to him. But he also, when Gamboa was running through people, he lasted 12 rounds and gave Gamboa a good fight. So it's a good replacement fight. Look for that. Also, like I mentioned, this young champion who will just kill you, destroy you to the body, Leo Santa Cruz. If let's say Abner Mahrez makes it through this fight against Moreno, And let's say he's loyal to Golden Boy and he stays a Golden Boy, okay, instead of going into top rank and fighting Onito. Leo Santa Cruz, that could be next. He's a big dude for 118. He's back in action against like a stay busy type veteran guy. You know, I mean, it's a he just fought September. He's fighting again. He's a guy that just punished morale to the body. I mean, the body shots that this guy landed were just, like I said, punishing. Just great, great shots. And also, he threw 1,300 punches in his fight before. So, you know, obviously, you know, the dude can swing. And Angulo, Alfredo Angulo, who was detained for, six, seven months? He's back. He's back with a new look, too. Vlad Klitschko is also going to be not on that card, but fighting as well. Right about now, I want to get into, so I think I said Lara by decision is what I think I said that at the end. But anyway, Carcino, I'm going to bring you in, and make sure you guys check out BoxingSocialist.com. It's the Facebook of boxing. Make sure you check them out on Twitter, at the website. You can listen to Ropadope Radio Live or the last five on archive on Boxing Socialist. You know, we're going to ask, you know, Carcino what's going on, any new videos he wants to talk about or anything that's been going on the last week. But fight night, the chat's full. You can blog. You can have, you know, video blog. You can write your own article. You can put a press release on there about a fighter and some ticket, like maybe a good ticket deal. And there's just a lot to do, and you know it's friends. So you're definitely hardcore boxing fans. You're interacting great. So make sure you check out BoxingSocialist.com. And Carcino, before we get into this 50 Cent Floyd debacle, anything new at Boxing Socialist this week? Any new video that's just getting a bunch of crazy hits, or anything that you've recently you know, downloaded on YouTube on your Carcino for Life? Anything you want to talk about for Boxing Socialist, buddy?
Nothing really interesting that's going on except for the new Floyd Mayweather video, but that's kind of like everywhere. And then we had an interview exclusively with Leonard Ellerbe from the fight last week with Jalon Love.
Interesting. All right, well, definitely head over to BoxingSocialist.com. I've been kind of out of the loop. I'm definitely going to check out that video. All right, well, two things with the, I mean, there's more than two things when you're covering the subject. But 50 Cent and Floyd, before we get to that, though, the Twitter thing, right? We talked about it last week. It was it last week or the week before? We talked about, you know, the whole shady thing about sending a note to someone that's about 5 days about to be out of jail. It's just strange to me. It just doesn't really ring true. You know what I mean? It doesn't ring true to me at all. It more seems like a coup. Like, you're trying to just, here's the deal, man. I'm going to, you know, give you this information when I could talk to you about it 5 days. That's random, okay? We're going to get into where that went. But 50 Cent and Andre Durrell. Andre Durrell is with the FMS. But when you're trying to get a fight going, hip-hop's different, right? I mean, don't get me wrong.
Right.
Hip-hop saying as boxing though too. I mean, I get what he's trying to do, but there's a way to do it. One, let the fighter say something when it comes to talking smack. And sometimes a trainer like Freddie Roach or, you know, a guy like 50 who's going to be a promotional guy. I mean, he's got 8 or 9 million people, whatever, following him on Twitter. I get it. I get that beef works. I get that stirring up stuff works. Okay. But to say how you said, he said basically, fuck Andre Ward, my boy can beat him. You know, that's basically what he tweeted. He basically said, man, fuck this dude. My dude can beat him. Now, if you're going to say that, right, just be like, you know, don't get me wrong, blah, 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 Andre Ward, but I think my fighter should get a fight at him or a chance at him or something. Just be like, hey, I think my dude should beat your dude. You know what I mean? Like straight up. I got my guy. Let's make it happen. Something like that. Okay, that's at least starting some, you know, starting something going and getting something going as a Twitter thing, but in promotion. But you don't have to say, fuck Andre. Why in the world would anybody right now, besides Carl Froch or somebody, or people that have to fight in Oakland, you know what I mean? If you want to say fuck Andre Ward, at least say because he always fights at home or something. You know, like, don't say it just out of nowhere, like on a limb, man. Hey, fuck that dude. Like, really? Like, what was your thoughts when you saw that tweet, man? And to me, I felt like you could hype that fight so many other different ways, Garcino.
Yeah, when I saw that, it's typical. But the thing is, it's going to work. It's going to have people talking about it. It's going to have people bringing it up because he's looking at it from a social media standpoint. In a social media world, they take little taglines like that and just blow it up. And it'll go a lot of places because it comes from 50. You know, he has his own website, This is 50. He'll promote it as such. So he's good at getting the word out as far as spreading it, as far as getting attention. But as far as sitting down, negotiating, making this fight, that's not going to happen. Because there's no money in the fight. There's no money in Andre Ward and Andre Durrell. Durrell hasn't had a fight in 2 years that was even meaningful. He needs to fight some of these guys that were in the tournament that he got jumped out of. Let him fight Frotch again. Let him fight some guys at the Kuwait class so he can build himself back up at 168. He hasn't fought a relevant fight in 2 years. So, for him to just jump in and fight Andre Ward, it would just be ludicrous. It wouldn't even make the money that they think they could bring in right now. But down the road, it would make sense. I don't even think they want to make the fight right now.
Yeah.
I think they just want to attach Andre Durrell's name to Andre Ward so people, it'll be on their minds for later on down the road and have people
right.
just talking about it. But if you understand 50 Cent, you understand that that's just the way he operates.
Yeah, you're right. But, you know, he has to realize he's in a – like, he could do the same thing and basically say a lot of the same shit. You could even be like, man, he ain't shit compared to my blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's even a better way to say it. I just think that taking that tone of fuck him, it's just like, wow, really, dude? Like, I get it, though. You're right. I mean, it's people on Twitter. It just, you know, this is what
they got to think about the people that are on Twitter. They're not that bright.
Now, we know from the YouTube days, hey, God bless a lot of YouTube fans, but we all know YouTube fans
not that bright.
As well.
That's
and man,
Twitter
it just gets funny after a while, man. I mean, it got to the point where people would be sending us messages trying to get in fights and beefs with other YouTube channels, and we weren't even beefing with it. You know, it was just, it's crazy, dude. But, okay, so we got that figured out, but the 50 Cent Floyd beef that 50 kept pushing and kept pushing on Twitter and kept pushing and kept pushing. And, you know, maybe that they had this deal. Maybe they did really talk about this. I do remember 50 about to announce, you know, in that press conference, remember, Garcino, he did say, hey, you know, he went to Leonard Ellis. He said, hey, you know, I'm not going to announce it right now, but we do have things coming. So I think they talked about it. Don't get me wrong about this company and all that, but it's just shady as hell to send letters when a guy's about to get out 5 days later. And then to say that you got all this information from HBO, when you know, I just don't get the whole, let's get away from Al Haymon, even though you're going to open up, you're starting a promotional company, but you want to get away from Al Haymon? I just don't get it. And not only that, but he's saying, like, the whole Golden Boy, you know, oh, Al Haymon wasn't, you know, giving us the fighters. He was giving it to Golden Boy. Mayweather said time and time again that he don't want a bunch of fighters signed right now, that he wants to slowly develop them and even work with the kids he's got in the gym to develop them and slowly develop it. And really, he's developing it in a lot of ways just with his own fight slowly but surely in the undercards and that type of thing. So my thing is 50 is just not realistic with putting 80,000 and 100,000 people in a stadium because you're not going to get $100 or $200 for those first tickets. You're just not going to do it. It's not there. Plus, there's nobody – I mean, not everybody knows Devin Alexander or somebody else. You know what I mean? Like, there's just not enough to be like, oh, screw the MGM. Well, the MGM, your first ticket could be $200 or $250. So my thing is he kept pushing, right? He kept pushing, kept pushing, kept pushing. And then finally Floyd, you know, pushed back, and he started saying it. And then at the end of this whole beef, right, then all of a sudden, now lately, it's like 50's backing away from it, saying, you know what, Mayweather put me up to this, and this is all bullshit. Well, what's bullshit then, the beef? Or you guys talked about it because he wanted to get a lot of attention coming out of jail because he wasn't fighting in the fall. So he was going to get attention off this, but then yet you go around saying you and Mayweather have a company, but then you go around a second time saying actually it was me, Manny, and Floyd. That was the deal. And then now the deal, he screwed you. So you just don't – it's just a lot of inconsistencies coming from 50 in this situation. And now to say that it was Floyd that put him up to this, that's even more random, because when you say put him up to this, so what? He was never involved in the promotion? I don't get it. What are your thoughts on this, man, this recent spat of Twitter stuff, man?
Well, from the parts that I know of, when I talk with Aram, because Aram is going to be helping 50 Cent with his promotional company, because they have a person of interest that helps both sides with Beltran would be helping with some of his fighters, and they got the same matchmaker that they used to, Beltran uses, Sean, so they'll be using him, 50 Cent will be using him to set up the matchmaking between his fighters, so Aram will be using him as a support, you know, as far as supporting Manny Pacquiao's promotional company. That's why they linked together. But Aram told me as well as, as he knew it, as it was presented to him, that it was supposed to be Mayweather Promotions, the TMT, and Manny Pacquiao's promotional company all working together. That way they're going to develop all of their fighters working together and putting on fights and putting on their own shows. So that went from that being the case to something about they wanted to do the fight themselves. That's what 50 Cent, according to his side, he wanted to get investors involved. They were going to buy out Top Rank, basically, for Manny Pacquiao, whatever he owed. They were just going to pay that off. And that way Aram can be paid off and he's going to step aside and then let them do the fight. And Floyd is saying, you guys can promote the fight yourselves. That's what 50 plan was. You don't need anybody else. You don't need Golden Boy. You don't need Al Heyman. I can generate the money. I can go and get the money from investors. He's like, I've done it for my movie career. I've did over $200 million twice as far as getting investment money into his project. So he said, for this fight, it'll be simple. So that way you guys pay them off, then you guys can do it yourselves, and instead of you getting $60 million and Pacquiao getting $40 million, you can get $100 million, $50 million, you know, and pay him whatever. You guys can keep the whole thing. And that's what he was saying, that you didn't need Al Heyman. You know, like you got to the level where you don't need Al Heyman anymore. And Floyd just didn't want to go there. They took in, Al Heyman took it as if they're trying to replace Al Heyman, and 50 wants to take Al Heyman's spot. So everybody has their own, like, interpretation of what they meant, what was going on, what was the interpretation of everything that was happening. So basically the whole feud that's going on is basically 50 Cent and Al Heyman. And that's real.
Right.
And if you're just starting off in this business, Billy Dib is already, from what I know, not going to be televised on Showtime.
That's right.
He still got his fight on the card, but he was supposed to be televised on Showtime. Now he's not going to be televised on Showtime. So you get to see some of the power of Al Heyman. He doesn't take too lightly to people trying to step on his toes or have him removed or even have his name in the press. He doesn't like that too much.
No, not at all. I mean, most people thought Sam Watson was Al Heyman for years.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Whenever the guy have a power to have his picture taken off the internet, I would leave him alone.
Right? Goddamn. So, well, that's yeah. Interesting. And I get that. I get. And when they started talking about this, I said, wow, this is a great idea because, you know, I mean, because 50 does have the resources, like you mentioned, no doubt about it. And he admitted he wanted to get this fight done, and that was the main idea of starting his production company, promotional company. So he did want to get this thing going, and he did, you know, it does sound like they had meetings and all that, and, you know, like you said, he's working with it. So, you know, who knows how this thing works out. It's just weird when we hear you on a radio tour saying one thing, and then a couple weeks later it's another thing. And then, you know what I mean? It's one thing to say, hey, you don't need Al, but to say, man, you know, forget Al and forget Golden Boy, like, you just throw away Golden Boy. Like, I understand what he's trying to say as far as we can do this without him. I mean, maybe the sponsorship won't be as high, but I get that part. I totally get that part, and I see it. But it just, to me, to say stuff like Al Haymon was the one not getting, you know, getting these fighters and giving them the Golden Boy instead of you, Mayweather's made it. It's not like there was some bidding wars over and over again that Mayweather's lost out on. You know what I mean? So, to me, I felt like Mayweather's been really sturdy and consistent by saying, hey, I actually don't want to put on all these events all year long. I want to slowly build my company. So, I don't really believe Al Haymon's screwing them off all these fighters that are going to Golden Boy because, after all, it seems like he wants to focus on, you know, building it within and slowly sign guys or get prospects like a Jay Leon Love.
Yeah,
or
that letter was crazy. Yeah, that letter made no sense at all because
yeah.
Golden Boy, the fighter that signed with Golden Boy is like the fighter that Floyd Mayweather didn't even want.
Right.
It's like they're signing them everywhere. It made zero sense. And 50's going to run into a big problem of overhead. He's already – that's why Floyd Mayweather didn't take most of the fighters back with him because he was going to reallocate the fighters over to Floyd until he found out what else his next move was going to be. He was going to disband everything when he shut down TMT. But then he ended up taking them back because Floyd and Al Haymon's not going to take those contracts. The contract he has with Billy Dibb, he made a lot of promises that he's got to try to get back his money on.
Right.
And with Billy Dibb, he's going to try to do a fight with him in Dubai, and he really has to develop him now because he's going to be going through so much overhead. He's got Andre Durrell, you know, and guys like that. You got to try to market. It's going to take time. You're not going to be able to do this in a year. You don't have the financial resources unless you're going to be putting your own money into this.
Right.
So where are you going to start seeing profit out of it?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that if you look at it, you know, it kind of started out almost like, and it's obviously internship isn't the word anymore, but it definitely started out, and I remember Mayweather even saying this, like working with Golden Boy, I'm really getting to see a variety of stuff, and now that's at times he's the lead promoter and he buys the undercards and, you know, and purchases the undercards to make undercards good. And, you know, he's really I mean, this is a good way to get your name out with the sponsors, with the people, with everything. I mean, I think it's a great way to have his own promotional company involved in this stuff. And then you can learn and you know, move, like you said, slowly. And when you're still a fighter, I mean, Golden Boy moved slowly too when Oscar was active. You know what I mean? So, you know, you don't want to – you got to have the right people dealing, but you also don't want to just add a huge team, like you said, just to all of a sudden put on a bunch of overhead. It just doesn't – it doesn't really work out that way. And when it says seven figures, we don't know how deep into seven figures is. You know, that's 1 to 9.9 mil, right? I mean, we don't know how far that one, you know, seven figures are. So, yeah, I don't know, man. It just – I don't know. We'll see where this thing goes, man. It's gonna be nuts.
That's why it's a soap opera. You know, you just got to wait till the next week to find out what's the new thing that's going to happen.
So what do you think?
Next week, I guarantee you we'll have some whole new thing to talk about on that subject from now to next Wednesday.
Not about it. I haven't followed it in the last couple of days. Has Floyd responded to that whole the last handful of tweets that he said something about, like, you know, my grandma made me stop because this is bullshit, I can't do this anymore? And has he responded?
Yeah, he did. He responded on his show, and he did on Atlanta. We got planned now. He's doing some promotional thing where he says 50 is still a good friend, not going to talk bad about him. So he's going to keep it respectful like that and just let it go. Right. He's going to take the high road, and that's the best way to take it.
I think so, too.
50 put a tweet out that he shouldn't have put. It was like one tweet too many that started everything going back and forth. And then Floyd got his buddies that don't like the situation, the way it's going, and what 50's doing. So they pushed Floyd to put all this stuff out on the Twitter. You know, so.
Yeah,
that was done. You know, and then they just said, you know, we're through with it.
Right.
You know, like, we'll wait and see if it gets crazier, which it did. It died down, and 50 don't want to do that no more. He'd rather just say, I'm not, because I think he realizes the mistake he made with stepping on the toes of Heyman, that he's going to have a situation on his hands now where he's trying to get this gym built, it's already a built. He's just going to, like, fix it up a little bit and come in as an investment. Right by the Top Rank gym. So he's going to have his own gym out there. He's going to...
Top Rank Vegas gym, you're saying?
Yeah. It's already a gym out there. This guy named Gil runs it. 50 Cent's going to come in as a partner and pretty much take over and run the gym. And Floyd Mayweather Sr. is going to be working there, as he's now the trainer of Andre Durrell. And, yeah, so... That ought to come out nice as far as a look, but 50 Cent has an album coming out next week.
His first record in like three years.
So you got to look at it that way, too, and see, like, how much is this promoting him and how much this is promoting his fighters. Because he was talking about doing, like, many concerts, like doing many shows. Like, he's going to do a concert after the fight. You know, it's like... Like, how much of this is promoting 50, and how much of this is promoting his fighters?
Right. That's another thing where you're looking, you go, huh? But, yeah, like you said, he realized that, well, I mean, he obviously burnt the bridge already, not with Floyd, but he's going to probably burn it with Al Heyman, more than likely. Maybe Al just taught him a little lesson on this, you know, the co-feature that's now not a co-feature. But for 50's sake, he better... You know, he definitely, I think he learned his lesson, because it's like, this is a different game, man, and you just can't act like you're just going to boss people around. You know, that's just not how it works, man. It may work like that in other businesses, but not in this one, man. You don't boss people around, because it's not going to work that way. But, you know what I mean? Enjoy the fights this weekend, man. You take it easy, all right?
All right, bud. Take care.
Yes, sir. And make sure you check out Carcino on Carcino for Life on YouTube. Make sure you check out Boxing Socialist. Him and Sean always do a great job there. You can listen to Ropadova Radio live every Wednesday, 6 on the West, 9 9 on the East, and 8 on the cornfields in Central Time, at least Midwest cornfields, not maybe in Texas. You got more big cities. But anyway, you know, just a little shout out. I'm going to go ahead and run down. We got a showbox with Gary Russell this Friday in the Ocali. Got a bunch of pro debuts to get into from the Olympic team, and just, you know, Ariel Spencer, Marcus Brown. Make sure you check that out. Could be interesting. Chris John, the super fight, okay? Chris John and Pirampino, I think it's Pirampino. I can't say the guy's last name, but Chris John, we all know him. Jordan is actually on the undercard as well, another featherweight. But check out that fight. It's going to be in Singapore Friday, which is, what, Friday morning, Thursday night, something like that. And then, of course, you know, HBO Showtime has cards. Epix and EpixHD.com and from Hamburg, Germany. Klitschko is in action. Make sure you check out that. Also in Finland, we're going to have Helenius. What is it, Helenius? I can't remember how to say that guy's last name, but he's a guy from Finland. EpixHD.com. He's a guy that, you know, actually it's kind of a fill-in fight. It was supposed to be a different opponent. But Helenius, you know, he's a guy that a lot of people like at heavyweight division. You should check him out. See what you think about him. South Africa, Mexico, New Jersey. Ton of fights this weekend, guys. Make sure you check out the fight schedule and, you know, see if you can watch some of these fights out here. And also, definitely RIP to Carmen Basilio, a guy that, you know, and I'm reading this article here on Ring TV. I read it today, and, you know, they're saying just 13 days after a Hall of Fame trainer, Manuel Stewart, dies, you know, once again, he was part of the International Boxing Hall of Fame inaugural class in 1990. Carmen Basilio died of 85 years old. What did he was treated for, I believe, pneumonia. That's what it is, pneumonia. He had pneumonia. And, you know, when you get to that age, pneumonia can definitely can take you out. But he was born April 2nd, 1927, in Canastona, New York. What a fitting place to be born, the home of the Hall of Fame boxing. That's a good look. You know, he had a nickname, and his nickname had something to do with him working in the onion fields with 9 siblings beginning at age 5. The years of toil helped develop the man Basilio would become to be, it says, physically and emotionally. You know, he's a guy that just, you know, he was an action fighter, you know. He was welterweight, former welterweight and middleweight champ in the 50s and 60s. You know, some of these fights, just what a great win over, you know, of course, Sugar Ray Robinson. And they fought twice, I believe. Was it 3 times or twice? I mean, he fought so many guys. I mean, Kid Gavilan, you know, at welterweight. I mean, this guy, man, he's also just known as a good guy, you know. Outside the ring, I was going to say off the court, outside the ring. But there's also a great documentary on ESPN. It's called Fighting the Mob, the story of Carmen Basilio. And we know Frankie Carbone back in the day in the 60s, definitely. He was sentenced, actually, for 25 years because he stood his ground. He stood his ground to the mob back to International Boxing Commission back in the day. The guy... You know, you obviously probably should have already seen these fights if you're a boxing fan out there. If you're over the age of 35 or 40, you got to know about them probably already. But if you haven't, make sure you check them out no matter what age. This guy's got some great fights. Both fights with Robinson are great. I mean, just one after another, no doubt about it. And what a great place. Like I said, Canastona, that's the Hall of Fame. And that's where he is from originally. And that always hasn't been there. So it's just, just a great place to be born for the guy because, damn, I mean, it's a great place for him to be born because he was a Hall of Fame fighter. And how ironic is that? But I'm going to get out of here. Definitely thanks to 154-pound prospect Chris Pearson. He's an up-and-coming guy. He's fighting on the undercards. Maybe Showtime Extreme. From that Mariz Moreno Staples Center, L.A., maybe Showtime Extreme will show a highlight of his fight. It's always a possibility of that. That'd be a good look, but definitely big shots out to him. For those who joined late, definitely check out that interview. But, yeah, there's some good fights this weekend. Like I said, that Garcia, I think it's Barrios, Barrios. I don't know. I think it's Barros, but that guy's a good fighter. He's solid. Solid guy. I think Garcia will win, but But that should be a good fight. That'll be the co-feature to the Arislandi Lara Vanez Margarosian fight. Also on the undercard, Alfredo Angulo, Leo Santa Cruz, who I'll tell you what, man, no homo. I'm falling in love with this Leo Santa Cruz. This guy's a banger, man. He can bang people out, and he has just a punch rate. That's just crazy. Just crazy. Two fights to go through, 1,300 punches. Just dominant. He's going to be on the undercard of that Showtime fight, Abner Mares and Selma Moreno, live on Showtime from Staples Center. The tickets are still available, $25, $50, $75, $125. Great ticket pricing there from Golden Boy. I believe in the Wynn Casino, the resort and casino Wynn there in Vegas. That's where the Lara Martirosyan and Barros Garcia card will be. Garcia needs this win because, well, he's undefeated. You know, undefeated fighters. Everybody needs a win, right? But he's got Orlando Salido, I believe, in February. They're trying to get that card together in Puerto Rico. Also on that card, it'll be Mexican against Mexican, or Mexican against Mexican-American, probably. And then in Puerto Rican against Puerto Rican as well, because it might be Juan Manuel Lopez versus Wilfredo Vasquez Jr., which would be a fun fight. Good doubleheader right there. It sounds like that's getting worked on for spring or late winter. Maybe February 6th or something like that was a date as well they were talking about. But we're going to get out of here. Thanks to everybody that listens on Archive. And just thanks to everybody out there, the fighters, the promoters. You know, boxing's turning around. Slowly but surely, we get these 118, 110s and tight fight scorecards. We'll always get them, I believe. Just ridiculous. But we definitely got a nice November to come next weekend. Not this weekend, but next weekend. Broner versus DeMarco, which has, you know, a lot of people talking. Berto Guerrero. I mean, there's a lot of fights coming up, guys. A lot of fights coming up. Of course, Marquez and Pacquiao for the fourth time. That's coming up as well. So a lot of action coming up. Enjoy the fights this weekend. Should be pretty solid. And peace out.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that you feel you have the upper hand. So now, as you fight, let's say you fight 4 or 5 years of straight survival, the bullshit, the whole bag. And when you become the world champion, you're like, you know what? I made it. I'm going to show you.